Hi, I'm Lisa Wexler. Welcome to this morning's edition of the Accorda Scientific Excellence Award, where every Saturday morning we introduce you to some of our best and brightest high school students. Today is no exception. I venture to say perhaps one of our more brilliant winners, although I love everyone we speak to on Saturday mornings. I'm Lisa Wexler, your host, and this morning I'm delighted to introduce you to Brent Perlman of Byram Hills High School in Armonk. Hi, Brent.
Hi.
Brent, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm excited, too. And, Brent, can you tell us your project title? And if you have to dumb it down a little bit, it's okay.
Yeah. So my full project title is Human Photosynthesis, Functional Chloroplast Sequestration in Human Mesenchymal Stem Cells. But Human Photosynthesis for short.
Okay. And human, I understand. But take me back to biology in eighth grade and tell me what is photosynthesis.
Sure. So photosynthesis is the process by which plants use energy from the sunlight to produce oxygen and sugar from carbon dioxide and water.
That's pretty unbelievable that they do that.
Yeah.
Human beings don't do that.
Well,
we're exposed to sunlight on our skin. We don't do that.
Not naturally.
Not naturally.
Yes.
So your experiment or your project was?
Attempting to induce this process of photosynthesis in human cells.
In human cells.
Yes.
That's pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, it was very exciting.
Let's talk first about why this would be so significant if it could be done.
Okay. So I mainly focused on all the therapeutic applications of inducing photosynthesis, besides the fact that it would be a really interesting biological feat. So theoretically, if you had chloroplasts in your cell, which are the components of plants that conduct photosynthesis, you would have increased amounts of oxygen in your cell. So that can be used to help a variety of different diseases where oxygen deprivation causes tissue damage. So for example, in heart attacks, strokes,
and
even in cancer.
Cancer. When you think about black cells, you think about black lungs. Do you remember that exhibit that went through? It was called Bodies years ago. I don't know if you ever saw it.
Oh, in the city.
In the city.
Yes.
In the South Street
preserved,
Museum.
Yes, with the preserved bodies.
One of the things they showed, which I'll never forget, is they showed a lung that had lung cancer. It was black. I mean, it looked like coal. It was black because the cells had no oxygen.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. They became necrotic and died.
Exactly. They became necrotic and they died. So oxygen is life. Oxygen is air. So the idea that human cells could not only take the oxygen from our air, from our lungs, the respiratory, but that there could be a mechanism by which we could increase that from just the air we breathe, it could be unbelievable.
Exactly.
You know, aren't there people that inhale oxygen, like at parties and stuff, as a therapy to improve their mood?
I've actually never heard of that, but it could definitely be something that occurs.
And therapeutically, if you could insert oxygen into a cell that was dying and reverse the dying process into a living process, crowding out the dying cells and replacing them with living cells, you could cure disease.
Yes, for some diseases like heart attack.
For some diseases, but big ones.
Exactly, the big ones.
Big ones. And also, it's never been thought of really before.
Yeah. To my knowledge, I'm the first to ever have done this. So.
Right. Now, you read an article back from 1969, Brent. Tell us about how you discovered that article.
Sure. So, to make a long story short, I was really interested when I first entered my school's science research program in trying to create heart tissue in a lab and trying to create a functional beating heart in a lab. And one of the main problems that we have when we try to treat people who have heart attacks is that our grafts, for some reason, aren't as effective as normal heart tissue itself. So what I was looking into is new ways that we can try to improve pre-existing heart grafts to help people after they've heart attacks.
Well, is a heart graft a piece of heart from another human being, or is it something made in a laboratory?
It can be either, but in my
case...
Or is
it a pig?
It can be a tissue from any type of animal, but I was using autologous grafts.
What's that?
Which means you're taking cells from the patient themselves.
Oh, so taking something from your thigh and putting it on your heart?
Exactly. But trying to use those cells that you took from the thigh to actually make heart tissue before you put it back onto the person's heart.
So is that what they do now?
Yes.
Really? They create differentiated cells for one purpose and they redifferentiate them to another organ?
Yeah, so that wasn't the exact focus of my research, but it's called cellular reprogramming. So
they can actually
take like your cheek cells and make them into stem cells and then differentiate them into almost every cell in your body.
I didn't know that. Yeah. That I need to have somebody win the Accord Award so I can talk about that. That's pretty amazing. So your goal was to make better hearts in labs originally.
Yes.
Okay. And then what happened?
So I was looking into mitochondria, which are the parts of our cells that make energy. Specifically, people who have heart attacks have damaged mitochondria. So I was looking into ways that we could try and rehabilitate their mitochondria so that they could produce energy more efficiently. And it all ties into this theory called the endosymbiotic theory, which some of your listeners may have heard about in seventh grade biology class. And the endosymbiotic theory is this whole idea that the mitochondria and the chloroplasts and all of these small components of our cells evolved from independent organisms way back when. And so...
But chloroplasts are in plants. They're not in humans.
But they all evolved the same way, according to this theory. So what's so important
about
this?
From one, like, Big Bang organism theory?
So the process by which they evolved was similar, but it was from different organisms. So essentially, I was trying to manipulate the process by which they evolved to allow chloroplasts to go inside of human cells. So getting back to this whole idea of the 1969 journal article, I was looking into how mitochondria interact with cells, specifically how human cells can incorporate isolated mitochondria in a culture and take them in and use them to produce energy rather than digest them.
Okay.
And so Dr. Margaret Nass was one of the leaders in the field of mitochondrial DNA to begin with. And I was looking through literature trying to find any type of article that dealt with chloroplast incorporation by human cells. And so Dr. Nass in 1969 actually documented the ability of mouse cells in a petri dish to incorporate isolated chloroplasts and use those chloroplasts to photosynthesize.
And what did they do? Did they eat these cells? How did they get into the mouse bodies?
Yeah, so the mechanism has yet to be elucidated. However, it appears to be some sort of endocytosis, which is just a broad term for cells engulfing foreign objects, but not exactly digesting them.
So maybe they were injected into them? Is that what you're saying?
So like,
how did they actually get into the mice?
So the cells, I guess you could say voluntarily, there was no sort of chemical added into the pea media in the petri dish. The cells engulfed these chloroplasts and just kept them inside of them without digesting them.
But then how did they get it back into the mice? Through an injection? Through a serum? Through a syringe?
Sure. So to clarify, all of this is in vitro. So they never actually took these mouse cells and put them back in the mouse. So it's all in a petri dish.
Oh, it's all in a petri dish.
Exactly.
That's a big difference.
Yes.
I mean, just thinking about things. I mean, in other words, Brent Perlman, Byram Hills High School, we have a ways to go.
Exactly.
We're in petri dish stage.
Yes.
But in 1969, this brilliant Professor Nass, did he go on to win a Nobel Prize or something like that?
She did not, to my knowledge.
But she was some brilliant lady.
Yes.
Is she still alive?
She is still alive. Yes.
Have you spoken to her? Have you written to her?
I've tried several times reaching out to her, but I'm not sure if the contact information I have is exactly accurate.
Now that you were winning all these awards, you won the Regeneron Award too. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Maybe she'll take your call. Where does she still practice, or where does she still do her thing?
To my knowledge, she's an emeritus professor at the University of Pennsylvania.
Okay, not that far.
Yeah.
All right, so her article inspires you. And you, Brent Perlman, the wheels start turning and they start turning. And according to your application, you pretty much devoted how many years, like your whole high school life to this?
Yeah, 3 of the 4 years.
3 of the 4 years. And this is on your brain all the time. And so tell me about your brain and your thinking. You read this article, you think about a petri dish, this experiment. In your own mind, now what happens?
Well, at first, I was a bit skeptical of the article simply because I was a bit confused why no one had continued this research from 1969.
Including that professor.
Exactly. It was a little bit of what looked like a warning sign.
Okay.
And so I continued to read a lot of different articles just with mitochondria and chloroplast and how they relate to one another. And I eventually started to accept that NASA's study did have very sound scientific reasoning behind it, and the scientific reasoning seemed to have been disregarded by a lot of other members of the community.
Interesting.
That's why it was not pursued.
So maybe she was dissed for whatever reason, got discouraged and moved on with her life.
Yeah, that could definitely be.
Wouldn't you want to ask her?
I would.
I would like to ask her. Okay, so then in terms of how you wanted to then take step two, where did you want to go with your studies and how did you want to create an experiment to test your hypothesis?
Sure. So I also wanted to do all of my studies in vitro or in a cell dish because that's the first mode of proof of concept studies. So NASS only documented mouse cells' ability to incorporate chloroplasts and conduct photosynthesis. So I wanted to focus on whether or not human cells could do it.
And you went right to humans. You didn't go to orangutans or rhesus monkeys or dogs. You go right to humans.
I went right to human cells.
I love this. Yes. All right. Okay. How do you get human cells? You scrape your own cheek? Like, what are you doing?
So the human cells I used were from a catalog, but...
Oh, you can buy human cells.
Exactly.
And what kind of cells are these human cells?
So I used two types. The first were human fibroblasts, which are just a cell that is naturally found in all of our skin. And it was isolated from some sort of patient that had a malignant tumor.
But they are benign cells or malignant cells?
I guess you'd consider them to be malignant because they were.
Oh.
But this is common of almost all types of cells that are used in long-term tissue culture.
Really?
Yes.
So the cells are damaged. If they're cancerous cells, they're not healthy cells.
It depends. It depends what you mean by damaged. It's just simply because many different cell types will only replicate for a certain amount of time in a petri dish before they just stop replicating and die.
Oh,
so that's
cancer
why
cells won't.
Cancer cells won't. Exactly.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Interesting. So for your purposes, they have a mechanism that allows them to work, but in real life, you don't want those cells.
Yeah. But the cells that I used that were most important were human mesenchymal stem cells.
And what are those?
So these are stem cells that are naturally found in the bone marrow of all healthy adults.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Very exciting. All right. So we're chatting with Brent Perlman of Byram Hills High School. I'm Lisa Wexler. You're listening to the Accord of Scientific Excellence Award. This particular project is really groundbreaking research, and it is research that Brent did on his own. You believe you're the first person to do this, to independently be able to prove that human cells can adapt somehow with plant cells, spinach, we're going to get to that in a bit, and create a response like photosynthesis in which we can essentially make more oxygen. Is that right?
Exactly.
Stay tuned for part two. This is very exciting stuff. We'll be right back.
Are you looking to cut costs without sacrificing quality? If so, Onboard Services is waiting for you. Onboard Services takes the administrative hassle of running a business off your hands. From payroll to benefit plans, hiring, and outplacement, Onboard does it all. Onboard has trained specialists to provide your organization with employees based on the skill sets you desire. A family-run business for over 40 years, including clientele among Fortune 400 companies, Onboard is experienced in over 100 disciplines. For temporary and long-term help, or if you just want to save money without dismissing your current employees, do what the experts do. Call Onboard Services right now. Call 609-945-8009. That's 609-945-8009. Or on the web at www.obcc.net. For a special offer, mention WGCH. Take the hassle out of running your business so you can concentrate on the bottom line. Call Onboard Services today.
Having a child with a learning disability is not easy. Winston Prep knows that. Until now, when your son or daughter was ready for high school, you've had few choices. Either send him away to boarding school, where he'll get that special attention he needs, or you take a shot at the local public high school, where you'll spend so much time trying to get them to provide enough support. But now there's another option. The Winston Prep School, located right in Norwalk. Winston Prep School is the only day high school for kids with learning disabilities. Actually, they start at grade 6, going through grade 12. Every child benefits from the Focus program, a daily one-on-one instructional session. Winston's highly trained teachers instruct kids with both language-based and nonverbal learning disabilities. If you're a parent who wakes up every morning and says, "What can I do today to make my kid's life a little better, to increase her chances of success?" then give Winston Prep a call at 203-229-0465. That's 203-229-0465. Or sign up for one of their upcoming open houses. Winston Prep may be the answer you've been looking for.
Okay. And welcome back. I'm Lisa Wexler. We're chatting with Brent Perlman, this week's winner of the Accorda Scientific Excellence Award. To find out more about this award, please go on Accorda.com, A-C-O-R-D-A.com. This week's winner, Brent Perlman, is from Byram Hills High School. Hello, Brent, and welcome back.
Hi.
So, Brent, we're talking about your project, groundbreaking research. You were one of the top winners of the Regeneron Science Competition, which is a national competition, and you're a winner this year of our regional competition. So this work that you did is being recognized by a lot of different very brilliant scientists. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You spent 3 years. Who was your mentor?
So I worked with Dr. Glenn Gaudette at the Worcester Polytechnic Institute in Worcester, Massachusetts.
And did you go up there a lot? Did you have to literally be with him in his lab?
Yeah, so when I actually conducted my study, I spent 5 weeks over this past summer in Worcester with him.
Okay. And why him?
Why him? So getting back to what I said earlier, I was really interested in trying to make heart grafts in a lab when I first entered my program. And he was taking a very unique way to try and create these heart grafts, actually using spinach leaves.
So let's talk about that, because one of the questions all of us on the panel had, the judges, were why spinach leaves were the plant of choice and would you want to apply this same technique to other plants, and why, and what would you be thinking about?
Mm-hmm. So I use spinach leaves as the source of my chloroplasts, mainly because they are widely abundant in almost every single grocery store and don't cost too much.
Okay.
So I actually use the spinach. The spinach that I used in my study was from the local
Price
Chopper.
Yeah. That we could just eat.
Exactly.
Regular spinach.
Organic baby spinach.
Is there something about a spinach plant being a vegetable versus another kind of plant that was important for you?
Yes. So the reason that I chose spinach versus any other type of vegetable is because spinach are green, meaning that they have a lot of chloroplast in them. And the chloroplasts were what I were trying to isolate because they were the components of the cell that conduct photosynthesis.
And so, but in addition to them being very green and uniformly green,
mm-hmm.
What about the fact that they were a leaf that people eat versus so many other plants that people don't eat? Was that of consequence?
That's an interesting take on it. I think it is of consequence, but the main reason I chose spinach versus leaves that people can eat is simply because it's just so widely available. Because one day down the road, if my therapies ever do come to fruition, we would be able to very cheaply isolate chloroplasts to use them.
Okay. So leaves are green. The spinach leaves are green, meaning we can see with our eyes that there are a lot of chloroplasts because chloroplasts are green.
Exactly.
Meaning they know how to do photosynthesis very well if they're a healthy plant, right?
Mm-hmm.
Excuse Shayna. Shayna is here, our doggie, and she is clearly part of the conversation. So, all right. So now tell us about, what does it look like? Are you cutting up the spinach leaf into a petri dish with other cells? What does it look like?
Sure. So to actually isolate the chloroplast from the spinach leaf, I first had to sterilize the spinach leaf. Because if you think about it, if we just isolate chloroplasts from a spinach leaf, they could be contaminated with all types of bacteria and different microscopic animals that could cause bacterial infection if they
may have a lot of dirt on them from the grocery store.
Exactly.
For sure.
So I created a novel protocol to sterilize the spinach leaves by using UV lights and ethanol, which is just alcohol that you can use to soak the spinach leaves to kill these germs.
So between the light and the ethanol, you were sure they were totally clean.
Exactly.
Wiped clean of all germs. Under the microscope, nothing else is on them.
Mm-hmm.
Then what happens?
So then, it's just like you said earlier, I actually tried to cut the spinach leaves up as small as I possibly could, and then I ground them in a mortar and pestle. And then I filtered them through a lot of different layers of cheesecloth.
Yeah.
And then I took this filtered solution and put it through a centrifuge, which is essentially a machine that spins solutions very quickly so that it would isolate the chloroplasts from the rest of the solution material.
So what about the cheesecloth and the filtering was essential to the experiment?
Mm. So the reason that I used a cheesecloth was mainly to get the bigger chunks of leaves that I couldn't cut up just out of the solution so that they wouldn't block anything when the solution was being centrifuged.
Okay, so you're pouring something through I'm imagining this now, and you've got these green, finely chopped leaves,
mm-hmm.
and you're pouring something through them. On the other side of the cheesecloth, is that the thing that then gets mixed in the Petri dish?
So that just needs to be put in a centrifuge to
What's a centrifuge?
So a centrifuge is this machine that spins test tubes full of liquid, or in this case, the solution, very quickly.
Okay.
And because it's spinning them so fast, they actually separate into layers. And so the chloroplasts form the bottom layer. And I could just take out the solution on the top and discard it.
So like salad dressing in a way.
Exactly. Just like that.
Okay. And the bottom layer you knew was the layer that you needed the most.
Mm-hmm.
That was the chloroplast layer.
Mm-hmm.
So you still have some schmutz on top of the cheesecloth, right?
Yes.
But you're convinced as a chemist that that stuff on the top doesn't have chloroplast anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Okay, that's really amazing. Okay, so now you've got these chloroplasts, and they are the secret to life.
Secret to, yeah, photosynthesis.
Well, photosynthesis is one of the secrets to life, right?
Mm,
it's a biological miracle.
It is.
Right? I mean, how an organism takes sunlight, turns it into food and oxygen, it's a biological miracle.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's an amazing thing. So tell us what else happened. So what next?
So once I isolated these chloroplasts from the spinach leaves, I put them in sterile human cell culture conditions. So what this means is I took them, I put them in a Petri dish, and I put them in an incubator with that what I would normally put human cells in, just to see if the chloroplasts could survive in human cell conditions.
And what happened?
They did survive.
They survived.
Yes, for 3 days.
Now, does surviving mean that they kept moving under a microscope? Is that what that means? Or does that mean they divide and replicate? What does it mean to survive?
So surviving in this context means being able to conduct photosynthesis. So I measured the oxygen concentration of each of my Petri dishes and found that the chloroplast, after 3 days, still had significantly higher oxygen concentration than my media solutions, indicating that they were producing oxygen and conducting photosynthesis.
So they were doing their job despite the fact that they were surrounded by human cells. That's the bottom line.
So they weren't actually in human cells at this stage.
Oh.
They were just in human cell conditions.
What does that mean, human cell conditions?
So that means 37 degrees Celsius, which is our normal body temperature.
Inside our bodies.
Exactly.
Okay. So not skin cells on the top.
No.
Inside.
No. Inside of our bodies.
Okay. And other than that?
Also in antibiotics and antifungal agents, just to make sure, once again, that they didn't have any bacteria.
They weren't
growing.
Contaminated
exactly.
themselves. So you got the temperature right, and you try to stop other variables from interfering.
Mm-hmm.
And for 3 days, they kept doing their thing. Now, were you applying a UV light, or were you putting them out in the sun on a window? What were you doing?
So I used an LED light that was just white light, just like any normal light.
Is that kind of light available to be given in inside people's bodies?
So that's a great question. It's actually not. Well, it actually depends on the type of tissue that you're delivering the chloroplast to. So if I did want to put the chloroplast in someone's heart, white light would not be able to penetrate through their skin.
You couldn't do it.
Yes.
So you have to do it with a kind of a light through an X-ray or some kind of a UV or something that you could then direct the light into, right?
Well, that's certainly one way to do it. But also, a study by Cohen et al. From 2017 used a similar type of agent that produces oxygen called cyanobacteria. And cyanobacteria also photosynthesize. And they injected cyanobacteria into the hearts of mice.
Yeah.
And light does not penetrate into the hearts of mice either.
Okay.
And they found that the cyanobacteria still were able to produce residual amounts of oxygen from the photosynthesis they were conducting outside of the rat heart, enough to cause significant increases in the rat's heart's cardiac output, or basically just its global heart function.
So what you're saying is they found a conducting agent to have it work for a while. That the bacteria helped them do it for a while.
So what I'm
without being exposed to light.
So yeah, what I'm trying to say is they don't actually need to be exposed to light to still cause therapeutic benefits.
To still cause therapeutic benefits.
Yes.
But it's lessened. It would be better.
It is lessened.
It would be better if you could expose them to light.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. Probably would last longer.
Exactly.
Okay. I mean, I'm just thinking for your next round of experiments.
Yes.
We're chatting with Brent Perlman of Byram Hills High School because this is an idea that you can't let go of now, Brent, can you?
No. No.
I mean, this is a brave new world of possible scientific discovery. This is extraordinary.
Thank you.
Don't you think?
I do think so. And I plan on continuing my research in the next 4 years during college and hopefully even after college.
You're a senior.
Senior in high school.
Senior in high school. In your application, you said you would likely go for an MD, PhD.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility.
But that's not something you'd be applying to right now, right? You have to wait a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I could see that. Okay, so so it worked with respect to the human conditions. Were you able yet to take your research, human-like conditions, mm-hmm. were you yet able to take your research and put it into actual mammal cells of any kind?
Yes. So that was the next step. So I took these chloroplasts that I isolated from the spinach leaves, and I put them in a petri dish with human cells, specifically the human mesenchymal stem cells I talked about earlier.
And what happened?
The human cells incorporated the chloroplasts.
They did?
Yes.
Now, did the human cells then have more oxygen after than they did before?
So I was not able to statistically say that the difference between the oxygen before and after was significant. However, I was able to state that the chloroplasts remained photosynthetically functional.
They were there doing their thing. Mm-hmm. But what we don't know yet is whether they could transmit the benefit of what they were doing to the human cell.
Exactly.
So that's the next thing you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to, it should be pretty easy to get a lab to set you up to try.
Yeah,
I would think
so.
They'll be lining up to find you. Very exciting.
Thank you.
And I love the way you explained it. How do you feel about all of this?
I'm just so excited that I came across this research simply because just having this passion for my work and being able to continue it for years without tiring is something that I know is really unique and something that I'm so happy happened to me.
Well, I'm so happy to meet you.
Thank you.
I think you're going to win a Nobel Prize. I'm going to say it on the radio to make it true. And I think that your research and your passion for your research is a gift to the rest of us because there are applications for this that you and I cannot even envision right now.
Exactly.
But they're out there because we know that they're out there.
Mm-hmm.
Brent Pearlman, Byram Hills High School, congratulations for winning the Accorda Scientific Excellence Award. I'm Lisa Wexler. What a pleasure to interview you. If you've missed a little bit of this interview and you'd like to hear the whole thing in its entirety, it will be posted on lisawexler.com and also on soundcloud.com, and we'll see you next week with another winner. Congratulations again, Brent Pearlman.
Thank you so much.